Hello, welcome to the Higher Education Researcher. This is a podcast by the Center for Higher Education Research and Evaluation at Lancaster University. My name is Jania Komljenović, and my guest today is Richard Budd. Richard is a lecturer in higher education at Lancaster, and his research focuses on the higher education sector, its actors, and the student experience. Welcome, Richard.
Hi, Jania. Thanks for having me.
So today we are going to discuss your research project called the 3D University. You say it investigates student experience in the broadest way possible, and I was quite intrigued by this statement. And then your list of various aspects that form the student experience in this broad sense. So to name just a few, you talk about location, layout, architecture, policy, identity, and so on. So my first question to you is, why are you taking such a broad view, and why do you think this is necessary?
Yeah, I think if I make claims to being the broadest way possible, that's probably a mistake or exaggeration, but I am certainly trying to take a broader view in terms of the work that has been done before and how we can then build on that. So to explain why I'm doing that and what that means, I mean, in a way, the first observation here comes from a point of curiosity. And anyone who has spent time working or as a student in more than one university will know that they feel different in some way. Some of those things may be obvious and some of those things less so. And if we take the comparison between Lancaster and where I worked before, where I used to work, it was small, undergraduate focused, very teaching oriented, with local British students and very few residential students. And that's kind of the total opposite to Lancaster, which is larger, undergraduate and postgraduate, with teaching and research, international students, and quite a large residential population, and different architectures too. So in a way, the research on the student experience that we see so far can be loosely classified into three kind of overlapping areas. One looks at social backgrounds and patterns around majority and minority experiences. Another one looks at kind of the policy framing and relationships with the university, such as customer or consumer conceptualizations. And then there's another angle which looks at kind of pedagogical and disciplinary angles. But what happens with this research is that the university becomes kind of invisible in a sense, in that what we're left with is the idea that certain kinds of universities are all fairly similar. So if you have Russell or, for example, that Oxford and Cambridge, that going to either is kind of the same because they are on paper of a similar age and orientation and so on and so forth. And to put that into context, if you look at the research literature at the moment on the student experience, you would assume that the experience of going to Lancaster would be almost exactly the same as going to other places which are similar, like Loughborough, Bath, the University of East Anglia, Sussex and Exeter, because they have, by and large, middle-class students who are a combination of international and white. They're research-oriented. They're in a provincial town. With ugly architecture, but good green spaces, right? Now, those things are true of all of those universities, but that's not to say that someone who goes to that university will have the same experience. It's about trying to unpack that a lot more. And the second part, in a way, is that the metrics, such as the rankings and the NSS, they tell us next to nothing about what it's like to be at that university. They claim to kind of provide some sort of really important comparative aspect about where the best places to study certain things are. But you know, ontologically, it's hugely problematic. So what I'm trying to do is fill in the gap and think about or fill some of this gap and think much more broadly about the different things that might influence how universities are different or the different ways that we can think about how universities might be different. So what works, what doesn't, and for whom, and how do all of these different things hang together? Essentially, what I'm doing is I'm not discounting anything, if that makes sense.
Yes, that makes perfect sense. Thank you. So this approach of yours culminated in the idea of a 3D university, as you call it, where you bring together the organizational, social, and geographical dimensions. So you I named three of those: organizational, social, and geographical. Can you tell us about each of those, please?
Yeah, of course. So we'll start off with the organizational dimension. And there isn't so much work on this in higher education, particularly from students' perspectives. Now, the notion of what the organizational dimension is and can be, if you think about research on organizational culture, tells us things about the history, about the ethos, about procedures, policies, admissions practices, teaching, management, the priorities towards particular subjects or particular social groups, the amount of research support, and these kinds of things. So these are all part of kind of the institution in a formal sense, but also they're made up of the people. So in a way, if you took everyone out of Lancaster University and then replaced them overnight with a totally different group of people, there'll be some things which are kind of done the same way, but also the culture of the institution will change. So there's a kind of a twin balance between organizational processes and histories and the layout and those kinds of things, but also at the same time, people who are there and how long they've been there for and those kinds of things and where they've worked before. So it's kind of a living thing. And then what my research showed is that, and the research literature shows this not so much in higher education, is that universities are made up of lots of different subcultures, and that works in all sorts of different ways. So it can be different cultures within or between departments, within or between faculties. Also, you have different spaces and different food outlets, for example, that have kind of a different vibe or a different clientele. You can also look at accommodation. So the students that I spoke to spoke a lot about the kind of the mood associated with certain kinds of or different parts of accommodation. They said, oh, this accommodation is known very much as kind of like the party area, and this one is much more kind of studious and international or whatever. So actually, you know, university is a huge diversity. And the university that I conducted this research at has 20,000 students. And so within that, you're going to have all sorts of differing, cultures or organizational levels within the organization. And people talked about the institution being inclusive and progressive and forward-facing, caring about its students, having time for its students, but also being pressured by research and being exclusive and also elite. So it's all of these things at the same time. And one of the things that came through quite clearly was the students perceived a strong difference between the academic staff and the management of the university. And this came along at the same time as the strikes over pensions and working conditions. And the students were very clear in their articulation that they saw the management as invisible and uncaring, and the academics as, by and large, being interested in students, but not being given the appropriate conditions to properly serve those students, if that makes sense. So all of these things are going on at the same time. So there isn't an organizational culture. There is a lot of competing and complementary cultures existing in the same space.
That's very interesting. So just as I was listening to you, I was wondering, where's the kind of individual dimension or student agency, you know, because you mainly address sort of institutional kind of dynamics. And I'm not really sure if your next social dimension addresses that or...
Yeah, okay, it does to a certain extent. What I was largely focusing on was not how students operate within this space, although that does come through and I can talk about that, but more about how they understand or how they perceive how the university is around them. Okay. I mean, so if we look at the social dimension before, you can start to kind of look at differences within the student body, 20,000 people with dominant and minority groups, and also tensions between them, forms of exclusion, and whether or not how the university is oriented, you know, domestic or international or both. I mean, this is fairly well-trodden ground in the literature, and there's a lot of work on class, some on race and ethnicity, on nationality, on gender, sexual orientation, disability, and religion, and all of these things matter. And there are some groups who feel more or less excluded, depending on whether they are majority or minority. A lot of the Chinese students, for example, said they were really struck by the fact that the university was very LGBT friendly compared with cultural norms within their institutions before and within China that was more antagonistic towards towards sexual orientation. And they described the university, the students across the university described it as majority white and fairly left wing, but diverse and inclusive, particularly around things like gender and sexual orientation. But at the same time, there were barriers between groups. So particularly between social classes, particularly between international and domestic, and also around things like age and language. And the language thing, to a certain extent, comes within the international and domestic. And one of the things on that level that was really kind of intriguing is a lot of the British students were saying, well, the international students just don't want to hang out with us. And the international students were saying, we really want to hang out with British students, but they don't seem to be very interested in talking to us. And sometimes they didn't have the confidence or the linguistic capacity to just go up and meet people or to talk to people. So, there isn't a single dimension. And some people found ways or mechanisms of crossing into different groups or meeting different kinds of people. But there were also a lot of people who didn't and found that the way that the teaching classes were organized meant, or the way that students were recruited, meant that it was very difficult to meet people outside their social group. So there was, one master's degree that had 200 students and only one of those was domestic. So this created, a very international space, which was sort of good at one level, but also meant that there wasn't very much cultural exchange in that sense.
Mm-hmm. Yes, thank you. And now the third dimension, the geographical dimension, can you tell us about that one?
Yeah, so this is the area which has been explored the least in the higher education literature. And it's kind of curious that not during the pandemic, but how universities are very place-based. They quite often are named after the place that they're located in. And this is part of the marketing, come to London or come to, Lancaster with its green spaces and history or whatever. But the geographical dimension covers elements such as the location, the layout, its architecture. It can also consider things like the accessibility, climate, and the facilities. They tell an architectural story. And you also have, whether or not there are green spaces in the institution. And if you're in a city centre institution, it feels and smells and sounds very different to it's out in the countryside. Kind of a visceral response to this. They choose based on where they are, whether it's in a town or city, and I'll come back to that. So what a lot of the students talked about is that the location of the university was one of the reasons why they went there. They wanted to be in a major city with infrastructure, with good shopping and social opportunities and those kinds of things. And also the location in the north of England was a draw for them because some of them said it's warmer than Scotland, but it's cheaper than London. So they wanted, they wanted to have a kind of a mix in between. And the fact that it's a really big university with a really large campus of lots of different kinds of buildings. And one of the things that came out was that the kind of the building which they saw as being the identity of the university, which was what we might call like a Victorian red brick kind of main building. They said this is the face of the university, but no one ever goes there. So it's kind of fine. It has this symbolic presence, but it doesn't have a meaningful presence in terms of the students, even though they all took their photos outside it. And at the same time, people sort of liked the campus, but they found it confusing. They found some bits of it inspiring, other bits of it depressing, some parts of it kind of oppressive and those kinds of things. And what we could see is that the way the campus, to some extent, created divides between groups, and or perhaps fostered divides between groups, but also then allowed bridges between them. So if you imagine that if you have a large campus, there would be some students whose activities are almost entirely located within one building. So their footprint, if you like, was really small in terms of the different places they go, whereas there were other students who had classes all over the university or had other activities. And so they knew the campus quite well. And so people can move in a way, different patterns or different circles. And those circles may not overlap. And then also what happens is that even if you have people in the same room at the same time, like, for example, in a large lecture theatre, people aren't encouraged to talk to each other. So you end up with that, you know, you have very diverse campus, but you have these divides between groups. And the campus, to some extent, can be used to improve that interaction. But also the fact that it's so large and people get limited to within certain spaces means that they don't interact, if that makes sense.
Yeah, thank you. So that's all really fascinating and great sort of points and outcomes you have. So if I don't want to be nasty to ask, like, you know, so what? Or I should maybe rephrase and say, you know, what would be, so how can your results be used in your project webpage? You state that diversity and cross-group interaction must be facilitated at university. So that's one kind of recommendation that you make.
Yep.
So I wonder, why is that based on your results, and how can that be done, or basically what do you think about that?
Yeah, okay. So to say that cross-group interaction must be facilitated, in a way that's a normative perspective, but it also came from the data, and I'll come back to that normative perspective. So a lot of the students said that they wanted to meet people from different walks of life, but couldn't or didn't necessarily meet people from other disciplines. So if I talk about the normative idea, there is a sense that a university or as a universitas is expected to be broad disciplinarily. And there's an idea much more recently that they should be diverse social spaces, socially and disciplinarily. And what this allows people to do is to exchange ideas and learn and grow, in a sense. And some of this is to do with social justice and social contribution. Now, of course, we know that this is not always the case, and that a lot of higher education is exclusive and problematically exclusive. But if we step away from the idea that universities are completely instrumental, you go here, you learn A, B, and C to do a job, and then you leave and apply it, there is some truth in this. But if we also see that university has a social purpose in terms of broadening people's perspectives, and not only intellectually, then having a diverse university is a good thing, but it only really ends up being a good thing if those different kinds of people actually interact with each other, in a sense. And from a, you know, from a social justice and pedagogy and co-construction perspective, a lot of us know that if you have a diverse class and they start talking to each other, you get a lot of different perspectives and they learn and grow together. And so from a teaching perspective, it can be good. And then also from a social perspective, it can be good. And this is not to say that everyone must meet and interact with everybody else. But at the same time, a lot of the students wanted to have this. And we can see strong social justice and also pedagogical arguments for having diverse campuses. So if you take an example of a lecture theatre, and a lot of the students talked about this, so when students walk into a lecture theatre, they all sit in their own groups and they don't interact. And the nature of a lecture means that you don't get a lot of discussion. That's not the way it works. And so if a lot of your teaching is undertaken in lectures, then you don't get to have much interaction between groups or much discussion. So I suppose the so what question is, how can we potentially think about making universities more inclusive and more interactive, I suppose, mm-hmm. within reason, without trying to kind of create this force against everybody else? You know, it's not like speed dating. It has to be kind of meaningful in a sense, and whether or not that's actually what we want to do.
Yeah. And so that it's important that we take this holistic view of all three dimensions and how they need to be structured.
Yes, because they all matter.
Yeah, Okay, so I wonder what is the most surprising finding of this research project in your view? So what surprised you the most?
I think what surprised me the most was the sense that while this wasn't an ethnographic study, from speaking to a lot of different students, I really started to get a sense of how they saw the university from the inside out. And this was slightly different to other studies, which quite often will focus on a particular angle where they say, OK, so we'd like to talk to working class students, or we'd like to talk to Black students about their experience, quite often as a minority group. That's where a lot of the focus comes on. But in a sense, what emerged was the kind of the sense of a university as a living, breathing, changing and diverse entity. And then seeing how the different elements interact, as in, you know, the organizational, the social, the geographer, the geographical, and they all matter. In the sense that there are different boundaries and bridges between those groups. Or so, for example, if you wanted students from different disciplines to talk to each other, or you wanted students from different social groups to have the opportunity to talk to each other, there are ways of facilitating that. And a lot of that comes down to essentially enabling small group interactions. So like small group teaching, or through, you know, societies, through the student union and those kinds of things. And then that also has implications for where and how you host those things. And at the same time, you can think about things like disciplines and even simple things like timetabling. You know, people are on different campuses, or people are on the campus at different times and in different rooms at certain times and in different parts of the in different accommodation. And how that all works. So in a way, if you, let's say if we had a goal of facilitating diverse interactions, there are lots of things that we could do in order to encourage that without forcing it. But it was the surprising thing was that the sense of kind of seeing the university from the inside out through the students' views that really started to grow lots of different things that they look at and lots of ways that the geography and the social composition and their position in relation to the social composition and the organizational culture all matter in different ways.
Mm-hmm. Great, thank you. So my final question to you is, how generalizable are your findings, do you think? So are these issues universal or global phenomena, you think?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good question. Of course, the obvious point is that no, they're not generalizable in the conventional sense of saying that other universities are going to be exactly the same. But from a conceptual perspective, what, you know, what you might call a theoretical generalization, all of those things will matter in the terms of the organizational culture will be influenced by national policy and the cultural setting, as well as the organizational history and its orientation. So also the social composition, again, this is influenced by culture and the mix and diversity, and also laws around LGBT issues, for example, and around kind of racial discrimination and so on. And then again, the layout of the university, we can see how that matters, and therefore different universities are all laid out in different ways. There isn't like a standard model of what a university should look like, even though most of the ones that were built in the 1960s kind of followed some similar routes. There's some research on that. But the difficulty is that when it comes to abstraction, I haven't been able to find a theoretical framework that allows me to incorporate all of these angles and any other angles in a meaningful way. I mean, my focus on the organizational, geographical, and social was drawn on a kind of like a review of the literature, which said that, okay, some these things matter, or we can see, or it's suggested that these things matter, but not how they interreact, not how they interrelate. So that's kind of a difficult thing, thinking how you, rather than just saying everything matters, which it does, it's a question of thinking about how you tie them all together in a meaningful way. In terms of the global phenomena, I mean, the short answer is, I don't know. I mean, it was a pilot study. And of course, a lot of the globalization literature says that you see the same trends. You see massification, commodification, diversity, and you see building booms, for example. The case of Laurentian University in Canada fairly recently was, to some extent, an internal issue around mismanagement and overinvestment in new buildings, but also a lack of state support. and the argument is that some of those similar things are happening in the UK. You also have questions of mobility to and from certain parts of the world. And you have these questions around unbundling and who provides what and to what end within the university and fees. But of course, at the same time, it's really important to recognize that, you know, you have this kind of what's known as a national nesting, in that even though you have these global trends, how they play out locally very much depends on lots of different factors. So we're seeing a lot of global trends, but I can't yet make any connections between what's happening in one place and how that all interrelates and how we might then look at that elsewhere. And really where I'm going with the work is at some stage to undertake similar kinds of studies, but with staff and students at different universities in different parts of the world, because there are also different theories of spatialization and understandings of geography that you would need to kind of bear in mind. So partly what needs to be done next is to find ways of theorizing this meaningfully, and then also to undertake this research across more institutions and preferably in more countries. Mm-hmm. So watch this space.
Fantastic. So just before I let you go, can you tell the listeners where they can read more about your project?
Yes, so I have a WordPress site which has the main findings and also the background of the literature which informed this study. And I should have had this to hand, but the address is 3dhei.wordpress.com. So it has the background to the project and the methodology, has various different forms of the findings, including a video that I commissioned fairly recently, and some of the literature which has informed this around identities and the social composition around organizations and around the geographical element. So it's all there.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so very much, Richard, for speaking with me, and good luck with your future work.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.